Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Martin Amis is an acclaimed British author and literary icon. He's written 15 novels, 2 short story collections, and 8 works of nonfiction. It's safe to say he knows a thing or two about writing. Born to the famed novelist Kingsley Amis, Martin has spent his life surrounded by great writers, including Saul Bellow, Salman Rushdie, and even his former stepmom, Elizabeth Jane Howard. Now he has released an autobiographical novel called Inside Story that turns all of these influences into characters. The book has its roots in the death of Martin's best friend, the English intellectual and socio-political critic Christopher Hitchens. Amis also includes writing advice for budding authors and for those who just want to get Martin's take on the craft. We zoomed in with Martin at his home in Brooklyn to talk about writing, his friendship with Hitch, and why he structured this novel like a literary mixtape.
It just emerged. I wanted it to be digressive and even pedagogic. Why did you decide is usually the wrong verb, because in writing you make dozens of little decisions every page, but the big decisions are subconscious. They emerge with the force of instinct and not from the front of the brain, but from the back.
Mm-hmm. What was it like for you to write about yourself in the third person?
It comes as a big relief when you're writing about embarrassing things. It's a marvelous means of detaching yourself from what you actually did. It's weird in fiction when you have the third person narration, but then the minute you type in the word I, it's like a zoom shot in a film. You really do narrow in on just one sensibility, and it's liberating in a way, but also limiting as well. All I would have been monotonous, and all he would have been monotonous. So if you can find a way to vary them depending on the context, then I think it has to be a game.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, the subtitle of your book is How to Write. Why did you decide, I'm using the wrong word. Okay, but let's try it anyway. It's too late. Why did you decide to include writing advice?
Well, because I'm addressing a young reader. And I think that the urge to write is almost universal. As I sort of demonstrate in that anecdote about giving a talk at my middle daughter's school, and I asked the assembly how many of them had considered being a writer. They were all 15 years old. And more than 2/3 of the hands went up. And I think it is something that naturally coincides with adolescence. This desire you have to commune with yourself and to take notes and to write poems that comes upon us when we become articulate in this new sense when we're adolescent. So it does seem to me like a near universal human urge.
Your father is the British novelist Kingsley Amis. How much did having a father who was a well-known successful writer play in your decision to become one?
I mean, I do think it's an extraordinary thing. If you want a father who's going to push you towards writing, then better to have a coal miner than a novelist. I mean, certainly numerically far more predominant. It's very rare to have 2 generations of writers. Not rare to have siblings who are writers, but 2 generations. I don't know why, but it's rare in any language, in any literature. So it does de-glamorize it, and nothing is more banal than what your father does for a living. When I was young, I think everyone makes the decision or forms the aspiration to be a writer in adolescence before having much reading experience. It's just an attractive sounding way of earning your living while having an adventurous inner life. But it did and succeeds to this day to de-glamorize the process. My impression is that in contrast to my writer friends, it doesn't strike me as such a big thing to be a writer. I think it sounds to me like a tremendous thing you know, someone who's parent with you know, school teachers or military people or whatever it might be, for a child to emerge from such a background and become a writer, as my father did, does seem to me an extraordinary thing. But it doesn't seem extraordinary to me to be the son of a writer and then go on to be a writer. Mm-hmm. I also had a stepmother for 18 years who was a very distinguished and brilliant novelist, Elizabeth Jane Howard. There were three novelists in the house for many years, and that is bound to have peculiar results.
Mm-hmm. After your father passed away in 1995, my fellow Canadian, the esteemed Saul Bellow, became kind of a father figure for you. What was your relationship with Saul Bellow like?
It wasn't father-son relationship. He was a mentor, certainly, but it was much more like a friendship with a tutor. It was very affectionate, and I'd spent time encouraging him very early on in our friendship. I wrote a long piece about him for a British newspaper, and when his agent read this out, the piece out to him for 4,000 words over the phone. And I've never forgotten this. She said, when I'd finished, he said, read that again. And I thought, now this is a man who's already won the Nobel Prize for Literature, as well as being the most decorated American writer in history. And yet they still want reassurance. They still want praise from the right kind of praise, from the right kind of reader. And about halfway through the friendship, he began manifesting symptoms of Alzheimer's, which then did very much limit discourse we could have.
Mm-hmm. You consider Bellow to be the greatest American author ever. What makes him so great?
It's very hard to define, but it's something to do with the weight of his words. But it's to do with the question of authenticity. When he tells you something, it's not for effect, it's not for show, but he has none of that. It is all business, his prose.
Yeah, I think the most poignant portions of Inside Story deal with your great friendship with the late Christopher Hitchens, the British intellectual and critic. What was it about him and about you that made it such a great friendship?
Well, it started very young. We were in our early 20s, and it was just one of those meetings of mine with a fair bit of just homoerotic attraction. In that I think there is a in close passionate friendships between men, I think there is some unspoken homoerotic element that is just accounts for the force of the attraction. And there was that too. He was very charming and sort of winsome. You know, he would certainly tailor himself to be charming to you. And teasingly, intellectual teasing. I gave him some release from being a Trotskyist and very earnest about many things, that my triviality was a kind of vacation for him.
Your triviality, meaning that you didn't talk about you didn't bring up such weighty subjects?
Well, I was apolitical when I was young. Mm-hmm. I was just totally literary. But he said, he did say to me that it was nice not talking about politics all the time, talking about sex a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Christopher passed away in December 2011. Can you tell us about his last moments?
Well, I was there, but he was unconscious for that last stretch. But I'll tell you his last words. It's an odd subject, last words. And I look into it in this novel. But, you know, he was a Trotskyist, frequently arrested, rabble-rousing Trotskyist. And then when it came to it, at the very end, and I wasn't present for this, but his son was, and he told me about it, Alexander Hitchens, just came out with one word, which was capitalism. And Alexander sort of came close and said, is there anything you want to add? And Christopher just added the word downfall. I thought that was great. I mean, characterologically great.
Yeah. Yeah, it says a lot about him. Yeah. Do you have a favorite memory of Christopher?
Well, I do. And we were in a restaurant once, a tiny restaurant. And there were two upper-class fops, young men in the restaurant who were rearranging tables for some big party. And we sort of found our conversation interrupted by them. And then at one point, one of them came over and crouched down and pouted up at us and said, in a flirtatious way, he's about to ask us to move tables. And he said, you're going to hate me for this. And Christopher said, we hate you already. That was as final as anything I'd ever heard.
Yeah, that's great. That's right up there with his two last words. I'd be hard-pressed to pick between the two as to which was better. You're 71 years old now. Your father died when he was 73. If you don't mind my asking, how heavily does mortality weigh on your mind these days?
Well, it's always there. Yeah, like a song that you can't get out of your head, an unwanted song. But I think it's fairly possible, reasonably achievable to get on decent terms with it. And I respect death. I'm glad it happens. I think it should happen. I think immortality is a repulsive idea. And Christopher was a great example to me because I thought he met it as stoically and without any diminution of his own personality. Dr. Johnson said in the sick room, the process of equalization begins, that process that death completes. That all distinctions between people are bleached off as you head towards death. And you become bad-tempered and you're no longer funny or agreeable. That's what Dr. Johnson said, but Christopher disproved that, and he kept his own thisness, his quiddity, right to the end, and his manners and his thoughtfulness were still beautifully attuned, and no self-pity, no talk about not deserving this early death, none of that. Met it face to face. Without any loss of charm.
Martin Amis, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Martin Amis is the author of Inside Story. You can get the Inside Story on Inside Story at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Matteo Ascarapur, Philip Proctor, David Osman, and Martin Amis. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast. It's available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I came out of 12 years of college and I didn't even know how to sew.
Our executive producer, nay, showrunner, is Adam Friedrich.
You may have seen me loitering around the drugstore drinking chocolate malted Falcons and giving away free high school.
And thanks to you, our alphas. We'll see you next week. I'm Doug Gordon.
You've got the wrong man. I spell my name, Danger.